They said they'll keep working on it.
The Education Policy Committee will come to order, and we have four proposals to deal with today, and we'll start out with Senator Salzman on Senate File 402, which is, we also have Senator Jungbauer's Senate File 739, both relating to background checks. Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that we heard last year. It was Senate File 2597 last year, where we took action in response to a number of news stories that had come out where teachers who have had a criminal background check done, we always do that. But in terms of teachers who had in their files with the Board of Teaching, there were other cases of misconduct. And in some cases, it was sexual misconduct, and there was a real concern that this information was something that school districts needed to be aware of before hiring a teacher. And as a result of that, we passed Senate File 2597 last year, and we worked with our teacher unions, we worked with our school districts, and also with the Board of Teaching to find a process that would work. And that is about to move forward, but the Board of Teaching has come to us and had some issues with the way the language is written and concerns that there may be other things in files that are not labeled sexual misconduct or possible sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, but because we are asking them to sort of start to interpret whether or not these specific incidents should be reported. So they have asked that we expand the language in the bill. And you can see here that it now would read sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct between the teacher and a student or other misconduct resulting in board disciplinary action. And I'd like to ask the Board of Teaching if they would discuss this issue and share some of the concerns they have, because many times incidents are not labeled specifically, and we're putting them in a very difficult position. At the same time, if you think about what was the original intent of this bill, it was calling to school districts' attention the sorts of incidents that we think need to be considered. School districts can already do this on their own, and many do. But what we're doing here is that we are then requiring school districts to then request this information. And it's all public information. It's not something that wouldn't be available to them, but basically we're now asking the board, we are giving them sort of broader language of what they need to provide school districts. So Karen Ballmer is here today from the Board of Teaching to speak to this.
Senator Salzman, before we go to Ms. Ballmer, was this legislation last year, was that part of the education policy bill that was passed? Senator Salzman?
There, Mr. Chair, no, this was a standalone bill that passed. It did go to conference committee and actually had a sort of an interesting journey in that we had passed legislation also regarding background checks for coaches, and we needed to fix that after it was signed by the governor. So actually in the conference committee report that we voted on, it included that language as well. So this passed last year as a standalone bill, and it does need to go, I believe, to the Judiciary Committee after this.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Ballmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak to you about this issue. As Senator Salzman has already shared with you, this is what we would consider a cleanup attempt at some language that was passed last year. We did support the language last year, and as we have sought to implement the language, we have run into some additional challenges, and that's what we're hoping to address with you this morning. Let me pause and step backwards just a moment to give you just very brief background. The Board of Teaching has purview and authority in Minnesota to set the licensing requirements for teachers and teacher candidates, to issue the licenses, and also to take action against a teacher's license if that is appropriate. We have language, authorizing language, in both Minnesota statute to do so, to take discipline against a teacher's license, and we also have language in Minnesota rule, Board of Teaching rule, that authorizes us in that way. To put a little bit of context around this for you, in 2007, and I apologize, we don't have the 2008 numbers for you. We're putting them together now. We can get them to you. But in 2007, out of the 55,000 plus teachers, active teachers in Minnesota classrooms, there were just over 100 cases that we investigated, 107. And of those cases that we investigated, 30 of them resulted in disciplinary action. So you can see the scope of what we're talking about, or relative, or the size of the number of teachers we're talking about, is very small next to the entire pool of teachers we have in our classroom. And the actions that we take can range from a revocation to revoke a teacher's license completely and permanently, to a suspension for a period of time, to we can require training, anger management training, for example, boundary training as another example. We can also require things like monitoring, that we will check in with this teacher and his or her school district to ensure that no further issues are occurring in the classroom. So that hopefully provides a bit of context specifically to the language of the bill that you have before you. What we found as we sought to develop a system whereby administrators would be able to contact the Board of Teaching and easily and quickly find out whether or not discipline had been taken against a prospective teacher's license. The language that from last year stated sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, and we found that in a number of these documents, these final actions by the Board of Teaching, it was less than clear. It was about whether or not that action would qualify. For example, we have in the board's 35-year history, we have language in some of these documents that doesn't disclose anything about the type of misconduct and as the basis for the discipline. In others, the language is just not clear whether or not it was sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, whether it involved a student or not. And we believe that because this data is public information as per Minnesota data privacy and laws, that we wanted to simply be the conduit for this public information, and that's why you see the proposed language before you. I'm happy to provide other examples, more specifics, but perhaps would pause here for some questions.
Ms. Ballmer, you mentioned that you had some concern about the implementation of the attempted sexual misconduct.
Mr. Chair, that's right.
Could you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Certainly. We have these documents that are the final action of the Board of Teaching. They're public documents, and they're typically very short. They will talk about, they'll give the teacher's name, his or her areas of licensure, and then some will describe the specific reasons for the discipline. Others don't. We have over 35 years and dozens of attorneys who have negotiated these agreements between teachers and the Board of Teaching. We have a great disparity in terms of the specificity of the language of these agreements, the final action taken by the Board of Teaching, and we don't believe that it's appropriate for the Board of Teaching to, even in cases where there is some language about the behavior, for us to make an interpretation. For example, there are agreements that talk about boundary violations, whereby a teacher perhaps was text messaging a student in and outside of the school day, was perhaps found at local establishments with students outside of the school day. We don't know if that was sexual misconduct, attempted sexual misconduct. The public, the data that's public in that those documents don't specify whether or not sexual misconduct occurred or if it was attempted. We don't believe it's appropriate for us to be sort of the judge and jury in those. These documents are public. We believe that it's not appropriate for us to filter in any way what's the information that is already public. And so we are far more comfortable with the language that you have before you that would allow us to, in this system, require or to share all information that we have about a teacher's history with the Board of Teaching.
Okay.
So just some points, Mr. Chair. A few more points, please.
Sure. Senator Salzman.
You know, I think if we go back to, because we're not really, because this is sort of a cleanup bill, so to say, it's to remember what the issue was. And that was that if something happened to a teacher in one district and then they moved, if it wasn't a criminal investigation, if it wasn't on a criminal background checked, then this information was not available. Now, this is a very small percentage of teachers, and this bill is not to suggest that we have a rampant problem here in Minnesota, but when you think about students and children, right. You think about the internet and how people have different access to children outside right. The school day and those sorts of things, it seems very important that these kind of situations be available so at least they can be made aware of them. So this is about protecting children and students. If we think about that this information is public already, many school districts have been requesting it, but I think that when you look at, if we have to look at situations here and you have a case before you and all of a sudden you have to decide, is this worthy of being disclosed or not? And I think that if the board was to take a real liberal view and start looking at, well, this potentially is sexual misconduct and this isn't, I think also then we have concerns that a teacher could say, well, that's not really sexual misconduct. So if we broaden this so that it is other misconduct, then we're really giving school districts the opportunity to make the judgment themselves and have a discussion with the applicant. And the applicant should have probably discuss this in their earlier interview before they get to this point, but it's taking the responsibility off of the Board of Teaching of having to start to make decisions and classifying these kinds of issues. The concern that we have heard, and I have worked with representatives of the teachers, they I know are going to testify about this bill that they would like to see some different language in it, but again we go back to, very, very difficult to ask the Board of Teaching to start making judgment decisions about this.
We've got a number of questions, but one of them is this relates to background checks. So the interaction between the school district and the Board of Teaching occurs when the school district is interested in hiring someone, I presume. So the school district then turns to the Board of Teaching for a background check, or this statute kicks in. Why would that background check not be done with, you know, through the normal channels of background checks?
Okay. That's a very good question, Mr. Chair. There is criminal background checks that are on record that you would apply to through the state, through the BCA, the BCA, and that would involve something where there had been action taken. There had been a criminal act. The issue that was brought up through the Associated Press, I believe in 2007, involved where they went across the country and they found that there had been disciplinary action, but because it had not involved criminal intent or there had been prosecution, that there were pieces of information in a file that were very disturbing about incidents that a school district was not aware of when they were hiring a teacher. And later on, when incidents happened involving a teacher and a student, and then they went back, and there was evidence that had we known this, but we were not required to look in their Board of Teaching file to see if there had been disciplinary action, which is different than, say, you know, a criminal action, then that really brought this issue forward of should we be doing a better job, and that maybe a teacher has left a district and this is in their file with the Board of Teaching, and many districts are going to the Board of Teaching, but as a result of this news story, I think it was in the fall of 2007, this is what really brought this forward last year in the 2008 session. Would that be correct, Ms. Balmer?
That's right.
So this is just either a kind of a second layer of security that districts can seek if they – it doesn't say they have to, right?
Mr. Chair, I believe that now it is required that this bill, as it moves forward, must contact the Board of Teaching. And when this bill was first introduced, the first version of this bill last year was going to require a school district to go online, and there would be a list of teachers, and all teachers who had anything in their personnel file were going to have a red flag next to their name. And so if you went, like we were trying to make it, I guess, easier at first that, you know, instead of having them contact for every teacher, if you went online and saw that a teacher had a red flag or an asterisk by their name, that meant you needed to contact the Board of Teaching for additional information. That seemed to be going too far. And it seemed to, and again, this is all public information. So we're not releasing anything that is private. It is public. But it is requiring a school district to go, and this broadens it so that they would see other things that were in the file that may not be related to sexual misconduct, attempted sexual misconduct. And, you know, there are incidents here that if a teacher was disciplined because of action outside of a school day that did not necessarily involve a student, but a school district would want to be aware of that, this information would then be available to the school district. But again, it's nothing that isn't public already.
Okay. Ms. Balmer, could you comment on page 2, clause B, where it talks about the language relating to an exclusion from disciplinary action, the court-ordered child support or maintenance payments, and then also the delinquent state taxes. Why would you need that language, or what does that language do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That's a good question, and thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. We are required under in two separate provisions of state law that you see here cited in the bill language to take action against a teacher's license as a result of issues relating to not paying child support or being delinquent in their taxes. In those cases, there is no investigation. There is no review by the board's disciplinary committee. We are simply a consequence for another state agency. The other state agencies use us as a mechanism and a vehicle to get folks' attention and to help remedy when other illegal behaviors are exhibited. So in these cases are different. In all others that we're talking about, the Board of Teaching receives a report on a teacher. We do a thorough investigation. The case is deliberated by what you might consider a jury of your peers, two of the Board of Teaching members who are active and licensed teachers who review every case and make a recommendation for what kind of action should be taken. These are different. There is no investigation. There is no review by the board's disciplinary committee. We simply suspend a teacher's license until we're told by these other state agencies that these situations have been rectified.
So under these circumstances, there's nothing that goes into the record as a result of the action under, let's say, 270C.
Mr. Chair, if for example, if a teacher was suspended, had his license suspended as a result of 270C, and someone went to our website, it would show that they did not have an active license.
Correct.
So in that way, there would be a way to see the effect of the statutory language. But in all other ways, they're unique and separate from the cases that we're talking about today, where the board really does a thorough review and makes a recommendation for action.
Okay. So just to clarify that, under the Clause B, the board would not put a written disciplinary whatever you'd put into a teacher's file for those reasons.
Mr. Chair, that's right. There are no there are not the same agreements or documents that we have in other cases.
Senator Rowland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is a good idea, Senator Salzman, but I'm just wondering about the mechanics of it. If we have a lot more schools calling the Board of Teaching to check these records, what kind of response time can they expect to get, you know, because they obviously need to have it fairly rapidly so they can get back to the people that they're considering hiring?
Sure.
Well, Ms. Senator Salzman.
That was brought up, I believe, last year, Mr. Chair, that we really tried to work on a process that would work for the Board of Teaching. And actually, by including this language, it probably puts less of a burden on them to have to go through and then start screening and then deciding, is this sexual misconduct, attempted sexual misconduct, is this something that we should be concerned about? So in some ways, this is not intended to make their job easier, but it probably would be less of a burden in terms of having to not just have more of a thoughtful process.
Would that be correct, Ms. Ballmer?
That's right.
Ms. Ballmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rowling, we actually, with an effective date from last year of May 1st, 2009, we began work right away after last session to get going on establishing a system. And that's part of what has part of the reason why this new language is before you. We went through all of our archives. We began looking at each and every one of these documents and realizing the challenges that we had. We have worked on setting up a system that whereby electronically administrators or their designees would be able to access this information by plugging in a teacher's name and file folder number. We've worked hard to make sure that that there is accuracy in the system, to make sure that someone's not getting if there are two Karen Ballmers, they're getting the information about the right Karen Ballmer, for example. But that if there was disciplinary action in our records of that teacher, that they would be able to access that electronically immediately. And we actually didn't start with that idea. We had a very different idea of how the system would roll out that was going to be much more labor intensive, and we met with stakeholders last summer and learned that it's very important for them to have this information right away, and that our turnaround time needs to be very, very quick because they are making hiring decisions and students' classes will be impacted. And so we've worked hard with our IT colleagues to make sure that we have a system that can be accessed with the information immediately electronically.
Okay. Any other questions? Please, Saul Schweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota, and we felt that last year when this legislation passed that we had come to a compromise, and we understand that the Board of Teaching has issues with trying to implement this, and certainly Senator Saltzman has been trying very hard to work with us. The purpose of this bill last year was to be able to identify those teachers that had had issues with sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, as Senator Saltzman stated. I would ask you to look at lines 1.18 through 1.20. It requires the individual to provide information in the employment application regarding all current and previous disciplinary actions in Minnesota and in other states. That language was added last year as a double protection. And if you look farther down the page, a teacher can be immediately dismissed if they intentionally submitted false and incomplete information. So I want to make sure that you know that that safeguard is there as well. The Board of Teaching has stated this is cleanup. We think that this is far from cleanup. This is going to catch some individuals in a situation where we think that maybe they have been disciplined by the Board of Teaching. And when an administrator calls the Board of Teaching to find out, as they stated, quickly and easily if these individuals have been disciplined, an administrator, we believe, will say, well, we have a choice between candidate A and candidate B, and we're not going to look at the person who was disciplined. Now, you can be disciplined for a number of things, including sexual misconduct and attempted sexual misconduct. But you can also be disciplined as for letting your license lapse. You didn't get your license renewal in on time. Or you were late in your timelines for IEPs. There are a number of reasons. Our main concern is this. With this bill, we are putting the people who let their license lapse and get disciplined by the Board of Teaching in the same category as those who have been disciplined for sexual misconduct and attempted sexual misconduct. The Board of Teaching just stated that the discipline can range from suspension of their license, revocation, boundary training, and check-in. In other words, the person who is getting checked in on would basically be put in the same discipline category. Now, all of this information is public. That is correct. But the difference, I think the thing to look at is that the administrator is making a call to the Board of Teaching, and they're not necessarily, it's in a different kind of venue in that they're trying to see, should we employ this person or not? And so we think that just because it's public, it really doesn't make a difference in terms of the administrator making that telephone call or written correspondence. The Board of Teaching says that they don't want to be the judge and the jury, but I think that they're being the ultimate judge because everybody is being put into one category. And we think that there should be some examination and that all people should not be put into one category and disciplined. We worked with the Board of Teaching. We suggested the following, and we think that this is realistic, and we hope you would consider it. We proposed to the Board of Teaching that the school that they would have to tell the school district if a teacher has been disciplined for allegations of inappropriate conduct with a student. That goes far broader than the current language with sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct. I said it was inappropriate conduct with a student. And it also would require that the Board of Teaching to tell the school district if a teacher has been disciplined and the Board of Teaching could not tell the basis of the discipline. In other words, it would be a remedy for those situations where Ms. Ballmer stated that the files go back so long, maybe in the discipline they didn't say exactly what the discipline was. But this compromise that we offered and was not accepted, we think, is one that will not put everybody in one category. How many people does this affect? Not that many people. But if it were your son or daughter that was trying to get a teaching job and maybe had a severe family illness and didn't renew their license in time and received notification and ended up with a discipline from the Board of Teaching, should they be labeled as having been disciplined by the Board of Teaching and may not get a job? And we'd be happy to work with Senator Saltzman. I know she's trying to do the right thing, and we'd love to work with the Board of Teaching to remedy the situation, but we think this language is going too far. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Alschwager, if there was something in the file and the background check happened and there was something in the file, wouldn't the school district actually be able to see the nature of what was in the file? In the example of the teaching license not being renewed, wouldn't it state in the file there was disciplinary action because a teacher didn't renew their license?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, yes, if they took the time to look at it. But, you know, as was stated, sometimes they want the information quick and easy, and I believe that if a call was made and they say, was this person disciplined, that at that point they would say that they've been disciplined and will send you the paperwork. But if they want to hire somebody quickly, that might not even come into consideration. School districts don't want any problems, and they don't want, and if they're choosing between one or the other, I believe that they more likely would choose the one that has not been disciplined, even if it isn't for anything that is inappropriate conduct with a student.
Ms. Barton, follow up. Can you just comment on if the situation was, let's say, a license wasn't renewed at some point in the past, and there was some disciplinary action, what would the Board of Teaching do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have cases where the board does take action in cases where a teacher has not renewed his or her license has been teaching. However, it needs to be very clear that that happens only after the teacher has done that for 3 years running. We do track that information. That's very important to us to know who is in the field and who's teaching and what are their his or her licenses and are they appropriate. And so when we receive on our reports the list of teachers who may be teaching outside of his or her field or are not licensed at all, well, in that case, we wouldn't be able to take discipline because there is no license to take discipline against. But in cases where they're teaching outside of their field, for the first 2 years, we engage in a dialogue with them and we say, hey, perhaps you weren't aware that if you're teaching X, Y, or Z course requires X, Y, or Z license, we need to let you know that. We expect you to be in compliance. We also communicate with the administrator about the same issue. We do that for 2 years. If we learn that in the third year, this teacher has continued to teach outside of his or her area of licensure after we have communicated what we believe fairly extensively with both he or she and his or her administrator, then after that third year, then we will take action against a teacher's license. We believe that mistakes happen. People may misunderstand our licensing requirements, what license is required for what class in the schools. But after 3 years, at that point, we believe that's negligence and that's not appropriate. And we need to, unfortunately, take action. So we do take action when a teacher is inappropriately licensed. One of the other examples mentioned has to do with IEPs, a special education teacher who may have an issue with paperwork. We understand that a teacher may miss a deadline. They may have a tremendous caseload in one particular year, and they may struggle to get those IEPs done on time. We don't take action in those cases. It is when there is a demonstrated pattern of what is in the statute, gross inefficiency or willful neglect of duty, that we can take action against a teacher's license for a special education IEP related issue. As mentioned earlier, of the 55,000 plus teachers in Minnesota in 2007, there were 30 actions taken. In our entire 35 plus year history as the Board of Teaching, we have 668 of these final actions. They are not done lightly. Certainly, you've heard there is a variety. There is a spectrum of behaviors that leads to these disciplinary actions. There is a variety of responses in terms of the type of discipline that the Board of Teaching can take. Even yesterday, as I do want to recognize that Education Minnesota has been working hard to try to come to some language. And so even when we received this language yesterday about inappropriate conduct with a student, we literally went back through documents and we're trying to see now, does this work? What does this mean in terms of how this system would roll out? We found cases where a teacher, for example, had accessed pornographic websites on his school computer, and students subsequently accessed those pornographic websites at school because of using this teacher's computer. We thought, well, gosh, under this current language, inappropriate conduct with a student, would that qualify Then we make the interpretation. There was no direct conduct between a teacher and a student. However, students were impacted. Another example would be a teacher who provided alcoholic beverages to minors, to his babysitter. He was not in his role as a teacher. She was not in her role as a student, but there was inappropriate behavior, and there was disciplinary action. Would that qualify? These are the kinds of things that, for us, are far less than black and white and very difficult for us to make an interpretation. There are others, certainly, that where teachers have evidenced misconduct outside of the school day. We looked at one yesterday where a teacher had exposed himself in a public place to an undercover police officer, and there was no student involved. However, we believe that that information is first of all, it's public, and second of all, it's important. And so we sit in a very difficult position. We have sought to think very hard about the language and whether we could make it work. But we continue to come back to this idea that it's just very difficult for us to make interpretations. And finally, that the information at its core is public.
Senator Baum.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up question for Ms. Baumer. With regard to Ms. Alschwager's statement that sometimes the school district is going so fast that they don't take the time to find out what the disciplinary action was, what is your experience about that? Do you have any sense of whether or not the school district, when they see a disciplinary action, does ask what the disciplinary action was regarding?
Ms. Baumer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, we do have a number of districts that currently, although not required by law, do contact us about their potential hires. And when they do, it is our practice, has always been our practice, that we don't filter that information. If they say, is there anything that you have regarding a student, we'd simply say, this is what we have, and here's the public information. Now, to your question, what they do with that, I don't know. We do encourage districts to have the information. And I think that Ms. Alschwager is right, that it will impact and probably already has impacted hiring decisions. But as noted in the previous testimony, there already is language that requires candidates to disclose information on their applications, but right now it's limited to sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct. We believe that that candidates who might have had an issue in the past with the Board of Teaching, they might have been on monitoring, they might have had to do some anger management training, this might actually provide an opportunity for them to be very forthright about that information and discuss that openly, and it might not have a negative impact.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Baumer, I'm still a little bit confused. You've stated that the board doesn't want to have to be making judgments, and yet you're adding language. It's about other misconduct resulting in board disciplinary action, and that is not local school board. I presume that is your Board of Teaching. Okay. So you've already made the judgment. You're saying that you make it clear that you've already made a judgment based on the evidence, and it's in their record, and then therefore public information.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your discussion on, because it would seem to me that if a teacher's license has lapsed, it's lapsed. So they aren't licensed at that time. You don't take discipline. There's no disciplinary action. They're either licensed or they're not until they've renewed it or whatever they have to do. So what you're saying is that they've gone ahead and are teaching, which might be in collusion with the local board as well, or for some reason the local board doesn't know that has lapsed and it goes on for years, that's when you take a disciplinary action.
Ms. Baumer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes. If a teacher's license is lapsed, then we could actually take action in the sense of when they would hope to renew. If that teacher tries to renew the license, we can delay that by a period of time. But in the discussion earlier, when I referenced the actions that we take for actively teaching teachers, those are for cases when a teacher is licensed, for example, in math and teaching science. So he or she is teaching outside of his or her area of licensure. And when we have evidence that that has gone on for a number of years, that's when we would take action against that teacher's license.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
I apologize. My mic is not functioning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just do the actions on a teacher's record stay there forever?
Ms. Ballmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel. Yes, those are, we don't have any, quote, expungement types of provisions, nor do we have timelines on those documents. They, once public, they remain public.
What was the, and maybe this has already been discussed, but what was the main purpose of the expansion for other disciplinary action? Was it the licenses that weren't renewed, or Senator Salzman?
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, I think what you're asking is why is the other language being added, or other misconduct?
Correct.
The purpose of that is because as the Board of Teaching was looking to implement this, and if every file, when it went through, there was some sort of designation, this is sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, it would be very clear. But what's happening is that as the board has tried to implement this program and to do some work in advance so it can be streamlined, they're coming up against situations and looking through files where it's very unclear, is this sexual misconduct? Is it attempted sexual misconduct? We're asking them to start to make judgment decisions. And this bill was always intended to be about kids. It was intended to be about making sure that a parent, that if a teacher is in a classroom and there's been disciplinary action at some point that has been put in their file regarding an incident that would be of concern to parents, that we know that our school board is aware of that. Because prior to this, again, there is a criminal background check done for teachers. But this is the gray area where it hasn't risen to the level of it's a criminal act. But I would want to know that my child's teacher was using pornography and had been, perhaps, as we just heard about an incident here, or there's been other situations where there has been disciplinary action, and we would like school districts to at least be aware of that before they hire a teacher. Again, it's not a criminal background check, but it's where there was, again, a national review of this, of where school districts here in Minnesota did not know what was in a teacher's file with the Board of Teaching. And there were some incidents that were of concern to parents and school boards.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do hiring districts have access to information? I would presume that there's some local school board disciplinary action that takes place in these occurrences too, or do they automatically just pass that off to the Board of Teaching for any disciplinary action? And in the process of hiring, if there's record at the local school district level, do other districts have access to that information as well?
Maybe Ms. Schwab?
Or is it required to be passed on to you so that it becomes a part of their licensure record?
Maybe we should ask the School Board Association. Ms. Kelleher. The question is there information that school districts have that does not go down to the Board of Teaching regarding teachers' activities?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is accessible to another district who may be considering this teacher for hiring.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I can just tell you from the best of my ability that all school board actions are taken in a public setting, but making it easy and available is a different action. And as teachers move around the state system, the Board of Teaching tends to keep those actions that are teaching licensure, similar to doctors and attorneys. They keep those violations there. The other ones, school districts either usually move to a criminal complaint if they can through a hearing process.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kelleher. So are school boards or school districts required to pass that information on to the Board of Teaching if they have taken such action? I mean, how would the Board of Teaching know what's going on in every single school district if the school district didn't tell them?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I believe Ms. Ballmer referred to the investigation they do at the Board of Teaching. It's extensive. They work with the local districts to do that investigation. So we help them get that information and help them do what they request. And the Board of Teaching has pieces that are public of these teachers' files and then private pieces, too, that aren't released to everybody.
So, Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Olson.
But Mr. Chairman, how does the Board of Teaching get that if it isn't reported by the local district? I mean, they aren't going to know if this behavior is going on in the local situation. I mean, the Board of Teaching, Karen Ballmer, I think, is the staff. Maybe there's one more. You don't have a big staff that's around there checking up on every teacher every year to see if anything has happened. So it's somehow that information must get to them for them to follow through and determine whether there's a disciplinary action that goes in their file.
It could be like an unpaid parking ticket.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, we actually are under mandatory reporting requirements.
Okay,
and
that's the question.
And I want to give Ms. Ballmer the credit for that answer. Passed it on to me. So, yes, on 122A.20, we do have to mandatorily report that.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was trying to clarify.
Ms. Allschwager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we all have the same goal. And when Ms. Ballmer stated that there were some situations that are not inappropriate conduct with students, but one would certainly say it's inappropriate conduct. I do believe that we can come up with language to make sure that those issues would be identified as being disciplined by the Board of Teaching. Again, I'll go back to our main point. We do not want those teachers who have had issues unrelated to some kind of inappropriate behavior, I said originally with a student, and if we need to expand that to some in some manner to include those other types of inappropriate behaviors, we would be more than happy to discuss language about that. We are just concerned about having everybody painted with that broad brush. And we would be more than willing to continue discussions to deal with those issues that she stated.
Mr. Chairman?
Do you have any language?
Mr. Chair, we did propose some language that the Board of Teaching did not accept, but I think it's because of the inappropriate conduct with a student. They've identified some other issues that go beyond a student, but that one could say is inappropriate conduct. We would be certainly willing to discuss that. I also believe that some of the problem is because in those files, if they look back, there wasn't as much scrutiny as to is this inappropriate conduct with a student or is this a license lapse? What is it? I believe that from this point forward, or last year, even the last few years, that the stipulation agreements that are put in those files are very clearly written now to the point that we know if any kind of inappropriate behavior with a student was listed. Maybe 25 years ago, we wouldn't know that. But today, I believe that is not the case.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dahl and then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just make a comment. And I think the language is good from 2008. I do also have concerns about the new language. And, again, I think, as mentioned, we have the same goal. Senator Saltzman mentioned two things, the board making a judgment or gray area. And I think that's the problem with the new language or other misconduct. It's gray area or other judgment that may not fall in the teacher's favor. Again, we don't want bad teachers in the classroom for a number of reasons, but I worry about those very few instances which might cause a teacher from keep a teacher from getting a job.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in looking at the current language that just three words are being removed from, beginning on 115, doesn't this kind of cover this? If disciplinary action has been taken based on misconduct, the school board or other hiring authority must obtain access to data that are public under whatever the section that relate to the substance of the disciplinary action. they must pursue and find out what the substance of the disciplinary action is, rather than just to assume that it's something that it might not be. So it seems that that's fairly clear, that there shouldn't be a broad swipe made as to what the nature of the disciplinary action is.
So just to note, Mr. Chair, if I might, I do want to note that I've been working on this since late December. So we have been trying to find language to address the situation. So there's been some discussion back and forth, but I'm trying to support the Board of Teaching and also implementing this, which we are requiring them to do for all the right reasons. But again, going back to, we want to make sure that we don't miss any inappropriate behavior, however we want to describe it. We've looked at trying to eliminate things, what things would not be reported, but it gets very difficult. So I go back to, we have been trying to work on this, and we have had some discussions about it, but we've had a lot more discussions in the last week now that the bill has been scheduled for a hearing.
Isn't it interesting how such a simple bill can be so complex? I mean, it does have it is, as Senator Dahl mentioned, it's an expansion, but it's and Senator Olson points out
it's constrained
to the substance of the disciplinary action. I mean, if you tied it back to the suspension of the license, then it spells out the reasons, five reasons why the board can suspend the license. Those reasons are immoral character or conduct, failure or without justifiable cause to teach for the term of the teacher's contract, gross inefficiency or willful neglect of duty, failure to meet the licensure requirements, fraud, or misrepresentation in obtaining a license. So, I mean, you could tie it back to those five reasons, which includes the... it would pick up the licensure stuff. So, I mean, that would, I think, limit it to what the board's authority is in suspension. Ms. Ballmer?
Mr. Chair, certainly one way to clarify would be to specify the type of discipline enacted. So if the language cited that we would, in this system, only disclose suspensions or revocations, for example, then there would be a whole set of other disciplinary actions taken by the Board of Teaching that would not appear. Those would be things like required training for anger management, boundary training, monitoring in the case of that's sometimes the kind of response that we have for when there is an issue with IEPs and we're trying to make sure that the behavior is remediated. We'll do monitoring, that kind of thing. So you could go that direction. That would clarify things. I think it boils down to what this, from a policy perspective, what your intent is in terms of what information should be shared out of the host of, again, what's already public.
I think, Senator Salzman, I think what we should do is lay the bill on the table to draft some language that we would clarify what the other misconduct could refer to. And I know this has to go to judiciary, but maybe we can either pick this up either today or tomorrow or take action on it. And that way we know exactly what we're expanding it to. Mm-hmm. Senator Roblin?
Mr. Chair, you know, I'm after going through this and realizing that they have to get the substance of the action, I feel pretty comfortable with it. And I guess if we go back to doing certain things, then we're kind of changing the purpose of it, which is to make sure that the Board of Teaching doesn't have to make the decision, but that the person hiring makes the decision and decides if that was an action that they would consider inappropriate or not. And so I guess when it does say that they have to get the substance of the disciplinary action when they make the contact, that I'm not too worried that we're going to be passing over applicants perhaps because they just were flagged and nobody checked what the flagging was for. They are going to get that, apparently.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chairman, it is only for misconduct that it resulted in board disciplinary action. So that's the action that's in the file, but it just clears that it's anything that's risen to the level that they take disciplinary action, it would need to be in the file, and that it's a responsibility of the hiring authority to check further on, because it's public data in that file, as to what the substance of it is. So they should be clear as to what it is, and then we wouldn't have to get into the pickle of having to try to identify all of those in statute.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Senator Roebling and Senator Olson, and I appreciate the concern on the teacher's part, but I think that given how few these seem to really affect, and that the school districts really do want to know, and that it's probably the right compromise.
So that point, Mr. Chair, just to add, is that as we looked at this bill last year, we heard that a number of school districts were going to the Board of Teaching and asking what was in, you know, a teacher's file. And it was not screened or anything. They wanted all the information. And it may be because they were looking for specific issues. So on the other hand, if we start screening what is going to be required, a school district would then have to say, but I still want everything, which is what some school districts have been doing. But those who weren't, this is sort of making sure that every child in this state, that the same sort of level of screening is then provided for the teachers before they're hired. So many districts were already receiving all of this information already.
Well, it does have to go to judiciary. I mean, that's
maybe be tougher than us.
It might be. It seems like I mean you can look at it both ways, but it's kind of like having a broker for employment. I would hope that the districts are contacting the previous employers to find out what's happening too. But if the board starts using things like expanding beyond beyond the five basic components of what triggers a misconduct, then, I mean, lots of information could appear in those files.
Mr. Chair.
So, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just what kicks it to judiciary?
We need to pass it out of here as a policy committee and then just refer to the it would go to the judiciary.
What's in here that they need to see?
The judiciary committee asked for it. So
right to data privacy issues.
Data.
Criminal actions.
So
Mr. Chair, I would be willing to move the bill.
Okay, Senator Roebling moves the bill as I believe there were no amendments to it. So moves the bill and Senate File 402. And any other discussion? Any
referred,
other
referred people? To judiciary.
And referred to the Judiciary Committee. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign?
Aye.
No. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I will work with the stakeholders as it goes on its way to judiciary to see if we can find some additional language that would address the concerns. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Salzman. Is Senator Jungbauer here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We have Senate File 739. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. After that lengthy dissertation on that bill, I'll make sure this is short and sweet. Senate File 739 relates to background checks. And what we seek to do is just change this a little bit. What happened was when we changed our statute on background checks, we required everyone receiving that background check to pay for it. And so we've had a number of school districts contact us regarding people that were uncompensated in their jobs, and they were losing people because the people said, well, if I'm going to volunteer, I don't want to have to pay for my own background check. So it's whether it's a uncompensated coach or just a school volunteer, it can be a burden for that person when they're volunteering their time to have to also foot the bill for a background check. So all we're asking is, starting at line 2.24, that a school hiring authority may decide to pay the costs of conducting a background check under this paragraph. If the school hiring authority pays the cost, the individual who is the subject of the background check need not pay for it. So it's very simple. It doesn't mandate that the school pay for it. It just gives the school the option to pick and choose the situations, and it does greatly affect the school's ability to get free volunteers that can't afford to pay for the background check.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, and you're changing a provision where the background check is discretionary. It's not a required one. Can you
look that one up? Senator Jungbauer?
I believe so, because it's in paragraph C that the school hiring authority may at its discretion request a criminal history background check. But in reality, almost everybody that's doing anything for a school today is subject to a background check. So even though it is a discretionary background check, I don't think in reality that there's anybody that's working with our kids today that doesn't get a background check with good reason.
But, Mr. Chairman, because it is discretionary on the part of the school district, then I think that it's also appropriate that they may foot the bill. And you haven't mandated that either. You're just saying that they may, especially if it means that the person won't volunteer and they really need them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yes,
thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the bill. It's a good idea, Senator Jungbauer. I just have a question about how it's drafted. I'm not sure if it makes sense to completely take out the language about it being the responsibility of the individual, because otherwise there might be some ambiguity. I think it maybe should say, if the district decides to pay for it, as you said, but if not, it's still the individual's responsibility, and we're deleting that. So it might make for a little ambiguity.
Senator Anderson, that's a good point. Ms. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, to that point, the recommendation would be to, on lines 22 to 24, reinstate the stricken language. And then on line 24, delete the period and insert unless. And then on line 24, strike may decide and insert decides.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would move that. That's a good suggestion.
Senator Anderson moves that
decides.
Mm-hmm. Senator Anderson moves that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay. Any other? Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the bill if it's ready.
The motion would be to lay the bill on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. So, Senator Roebling makes that motion, and Any other discussion or anyone else that would like to testify? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. You're correct. It was a very quick. And thank you for bringing that forward.
Well, I've told some of my cohorts I take very, very few lengthy bills. I like to specialize in short, sweet, and to-the-point bills.
All right. Next, we have Senator Dibble. And I believe the first bill that we'll be taking up will be Senate File 971. And then you also have Senate File 1076. 971.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 971 has to do with school bullying, violence, intimidation, and harassment in our public schools. I'm sure you know, members who have served on this committee have had some discussion about this topic in the past. It comes up from time to time, and the reason we're bringing this bill forward is because the strong evidence is that we still lack some clarity in our law. We still lack some uniformity of practice across our school districts. And there's some ambiguity in the law itself with two different statutes that seem to give somewhat varying direction to schools and school districts. Just very quickly and very simply put, Mr. Chair and members, and as I'm sure you all are very well aware, bullying, harassment, intimidation, and violence is not a trifling matter in our schools and in our kids' life. It's just not simply a case of boys being boys or mean girls or whatever we hear about. It has a very, very devastating consequence, as lifelong implications for kids and worse for its victims. Failure to learn and thrive, depression, isolation, severe damage to self-esteem, even suicide can result from what students experience in our schools. Bullying also, of course, harms bystanders and onlookers and the general climate for all of our kids and, frankly, the adults in a building, as well as the perpetrators. But it absolutely doesn't have to be that way. Through proactive efforts, schools have successfully changed their climate so that all kids can feel safe, they can feel supported, accepted, comfortable coming to school. To be clear, this bill is not a new mandate. Should not cost schools anything or school districts anything. It's simply an update. It's a streamlining clarification of existing responsibilities. Like I said earlier, through a lot of effort, and we'll hear about that in some of our testimony, it's become very obvious that Commissioner of Education hasn't really been carrying out their responsibilities. Schools themselves have not adopted uniform policies across the state. They're not keeping track of them. Some are doing a great job. I don't want to overemphasize that point, but many are not. They're not communicating them consistently to students, parents, and staff, or keeping track of what's going on. And the simple fact is bullying is occurring in Minnesota schools, and something's not right, and so we really have to get a handle on it. Too many kids are suffering needlessly. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer a quick amendment, if I can, orally, and Mr. Nauman can help with that, so that we're clear that we're not trying to add new stuff. We're trying to just simply clarify what's going on. And it's on page 2, after line 12. We're going to add a sentence.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble had some conversations with some of the school districts out in the hall, and the recommendation was to add the following sentence after period after data. So it would be a new sentence that reads, a school district may utilize any existing data collection system to meet the obligations of this section, period.
Okay. Mr. Nauman, what line is that?
Line 2, page 2, line 12. So a new sentence that begins after data, period. It reads, a school district may utilize any existing data collection system to meet the obligations of this section, period.
So moved.
Okay, Senator Weaver moves that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
So, Mr. Chair, quickly to the bill.
Senator Dibble.
Like I said, there are two sections in statute that call for bullying policies, 121A.03 and 121A.0695. That's resulted in you know, a little bit of confusion to school districts, distinct policies, lack of consistency. Chapter 363A is the human rights statute, yet there's inconsistency between the provisions of the human rights statutes and the policies that have been adopted. And so we just simply make it clear in the language on the first page there in subdivision 2 exactly what we're talking about: harassment, bullying, intimidation, and violence based on the enumerated characteristics, as well as physical characteristics that is not contained, of course, in the human rights statute, but, of course, is associated greatly with bullying, intimidation, and harassment. But it does also say, just so that folks are clear, based on but not limited to, because, of course, all kinds of kids for all kinds of different reasons are subject to bullying. It also asks that there be some training for teachers says school employees shall receive training on preventing and responding to harassment, bullying, intimidation, and violence. Mr. Chair, that's specifically not specific, intentionally not specific. That is contained in model policies already. Many schools are already doing this. We didn't want to get too specific, or else we would get hung up on issues of trying to be too directive and creating new mandates and creating new expenses for schools. And it just makes clear as well that the commissioner needs to review these policies and make them available to the public upon request. That was as we were trying to figure out where these policies have been adopted and promulgated and where they haven't. Commissioner clearly didn't have a handle on whether or not districts were living up to their already existing obligations in state statute. We already talked about the incidents data collection. That's just to make sure that we know what's going on, that we have some measure of school climate. And like I said, the addition of the sentence is to make sure that we're not creating new kinds of data collection or new kinds of databases and adding a great deal of expense. Mr. Chair, with that, I can see, so we have a number of testifiers.
Yes, I have a list, Senator Dibble. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I'm not clear why you want to repeal 121A. It seems to be pretty clear what they're trying to get at there. When I read it, I guess I think I understand what they're trying to do. Why the repeal?
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Simply because 128.0695 is somewhat repetitive of 121A.03. It's, you know, so school districts haven't really known which statute to look at. You know, it's repetitive, and they're at some variance to each other, so it makes it clear there's specific direction. What these bullying policies are talking about and what they need to contain and some of the actions that result.
Senator Hand.
Oh, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I kind of agree with Senator Scogin. The bill of the section of law that you're repealing says that the school board shall adopt a written policy prohibiting intimidation bullying of any student, which I would take to mean every, all. Doesn't exclude anyone. Every student is covered by that. And it says the policy shall address bullying in all forms. And so that seems to me to be a fairly broad and inclusive statement that intimidation and bullying would not be tolerated against any student for any reason. And so why would we repeal that?
Well, Mr. Chair, we're not...
Senator Dill.
We're not repealing. We're capturing that intent. So it's not a repeal in the classic sense. Bullying policies will still be required and deal with bullying in all forms against all kids. That will just simply be contained in 121A.03.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the difference is that you're attempting to name all of the things that can be possibly the root of bullying, and the reality is that every single person has differences, and somebody can find a reason to pick on them, especially kids, unless that they're taught from the very beginning that every person has value and therefore should be respected. And if we could get at the root of this, we wouldn't have to try to lay out everybody's differences and spend time trying to teach what those differences are. The common thing that we have is that we're all human. And in spite of that, which means that we have failings and imperfections, is that we also have a responsibility to respect another individual because of that worth. And I wish we could focus on effective ways of doing that. I know that teachers from the beginning, some have been very effective. Some have, we've tied their hands in many ways of trying to uphold the kind of behavior that they expect in their classroom. But this needs to be inculcated by family and parents, and it doesn't happen just by spending time trying to focus on all the differences. So I think the current statute covers it all. We shouldn't be picking on anybody, period.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Well, to be clear, both are current statutes. There's confusion between the two statutes. So there needs to be some ability for school districts to understand what their obligations are under the law. We have two statutes. They're confusing, and they're in some conflict to each other. The language that I propose in the bill says that prohibits harassment, bullying, intimidation, and violence based on, but not limited to. So of course, the enumerated characteristics are included explicitly, and that's very important because, Senator Olson, in a perfect world, that would be nice if we all just focus on the fact that we're all human beings and we should all treat each other with respect. The fact of the matter is it's abundantly clear through the evidence that, unless we talk about specific things, race, color, creed, religion, sexual orientation, gender, et cetera, these policies are much, much less effective. And kids are subject to the kind of bullying and harassment, intimidation that we don't want them to be. And we're not giving clear direction and clear intent, from ourselves to school districts. It's simply a fact of the matter, and it's well established in court findings as well. The reason we have human rights statutes that are specific about discrimination, non-discrimination, and we name specific characteristics is because without that, discrimination would still exist against certain types of individuals for their differences or their perceived differences.
Senator Bonhoff and then Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Address what Senator Hahn and Senator Olson was saying, and I think your comments probably did make that very clear, but there are two statutes on the books, and there's a separate section that says sexual, religious, and racial harassment and violence policy. So in bringing forward the legislation this way, we have simply merged those two statutes together so that they aren't in two separate places, which seems to make sense. And I just want to underscore the importance of actually listing them out, because I think it's a teaching moment opportunity, and that because Senator Dibble's legislation has also added school employees shall receive training, that if we enact this law, that now we've raised to the level of consciousness again this conversation. And we're saying, things like an increase in teen suicide. And I just am so certain that at the heart of so many of these mental health issues is the bullying. And just on a personal note, my daughter is a college student, and there's this organization that was infiltrating college campuses. I won't use the name because I don't think that I can, but they were this was designed to sexually harass young women. And then these other men on the campus would pile on and say sexually harassing things. And I ended up contacting our attorney general, who contacted the university, and through her work, we were able to shut this down. But it is so prevalent all over, and I can tell you that it destroys these young people's lives. So I appreciate this work, and I know we each bring our experiences to our legislative work, but I think that it is important to shine a spotlight on what's happening and then do all that we can to stop it.
Senator Hand and Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Doblin, your comments, you were saying that there is confusion and that there are districts that have not adopted policies to deal with this. And which districts are those that are confused and have not got policies on bullying and intimidation?
That Mr. Chair, we have a witness will be prepared to answer that. They did quite a bit of work over the past year. I don't have that in my file right here.
And Mr. Chairman, and just to be clear, because the reason I'm curious is that you're right. We have a law that we passed that said each school district shall, and I'm not aware of any that haven't. And maybe there are some, but I think if they haven't, it would be good to know that and know why. And I guess at some point it would be good to get a list of the districts that haven't followed that policy or haven't followed that law.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate all the comments, and I do want to just add a little bit to Senator Bonhoeff's comment about this the spotlight. Having served on a school board for 8 years just last year, I think we need more clarity, and I think we need I think combining these two is really important, and I think we do need a spotlight, and also being a parent of students right now in middle school. And a parent of three sons, who I deal with this with my kids. And it needs to rise to a different level. And I think any chance that we can, bullying absolutely affects all students in different ways. And there isn't, I believe, a bright enough spotlight on it currently. So it needs to rise to a different level. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dole.
I'll just add one more point. Well, very quickly, I wanted to read a quote from the Supreme Court on Romer v. Evans. It says, enumeration is the essential device used to make the duty not to discriminate concrete and to provide guidance for those who must comply. And, you know, I'll also just say that, to be sure, all kids experience bullying, violence, intimidation, harassment. At some point or another, they get treated poorly by a peer. It is really important for the committee to appreciate, though, kind of devastating impact and the potential harm that that causes to kids who are members of marginalized groups for whatever reason, the impact it has on their self-esteem, their ability to thrive and participate in school, to even want to go to school, the impact it has on suicidal ideations. You know, that just absolutely can't be given short shrift or dismissed under the guise that we're all humans and we all get bullying, receive bullying and harassment. The data is clear. You know, some kids, some marginalized communities, I'm most familiar, of course, with gay kids, you know, by factors of 40%+, these kids consider suicide as a result of the treatment that they're given at the hands of their peers and others. We absolutely need to name specifically what we're talking about. To do less is to not serve our kids.
Senator Hand, and then I think we should listen to the testimony. We have quite a long list. Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Dibble. And I guess I'm not quite sure if I would agree that enumeration is of these things is the better way to go, because one of the potential dangers with enumeration is that there may be groups or things that are not listed, and then the perception is that those things may be not covered by the law. For example, what about a person's political beliefs if they are being intimidated or bullied on the basis of their politics?
That's not included in the list. Was that something then that people are permitted to do? What does a school district do about that? If somebody says, well, I belong to the Libertarian Club and Mr. Chair, people are after me and I don't think that's right. And they say, well, the law doesn't say anything about politics, so I guess it's just free speech. That, to me, is one of the dangers, that if you have a
Mr.
more
Chair,
inclusive statement, then it's covered.
Mr. Chair, creed is okay. included in the list.
Well, Mr.
And
Chairman,
it also says not limited to.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I think we should move into the testimony. I know there's quite a long list of people who would like to testify. The first is Ms. Alschweiger from Education Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota, we want to go on record saying that we support Senate File 971 and Senator Dibble's efforts to deal with bullying, intimidation, harassment, and violence in the schools. In order to be an effective teacher, you have to have a climate that is conducive to learning. And as a former elementary teacher, I saw firsthand some situations where students tend to bully. When I think one of the most important components in this bill is the training piece. Senator Olson, I think, said it very well when she said that we need to focus on effective ways to deal with bullying. And the way to do that is to properly train the school staff on this. Until you get an entire climate in a school building where students know that this is not acceptable, I think this will continue to happen. I also think that it will be something that is transferred to adults as well, because we all know that as children grow up, some of the behaviors that they had when they were younger continue when they are adults. And I think this has a bigger possible impact on all of society if you started at the younger ages. And I'm going to keep my testimony very brief because I know you have a long list of testifiers, and I would like to testify briefly on the next bullying bill. So we wholeheartedly support Senator Dibble's efforts and think that it can not only change the climate in this in the classroom, but also affect student achievement because the atmosphere in the classroom is going to be more conducive to learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alschweiger. I'd invite the three students, to all come to the front of the table. Kara Hess, Andy Berlin, Leah Motz. You'd all want to just come up and grab a seat, and then if you would give your name and then also pull that microphone closer so that you can speak right into it. So I'm not sure who would like to start, but if someone wants to, please go ahead. Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Kara Hesse, and I live in Apple Valley, and I'm a junior at Apple Valley High School, where I'm an officer of the Diversity Club. I'm here today in support of this bill. This bill is badly needed, both to make bullying more identifiable and to give teachers the tools they need to stop it. The kind of bullying defined in the bill happens all the time. I see it daily, both in my regular classes and in my honors classes. I've seen kids bullied and harassed because of their suspected sexual orientation, because of their race or heritage, and oftentimes because of their body type. Most of the time, this bullying bullying or harassment happens under the guise of being a joke, only it is not a joke. I personally have been bullied both because of my Asian heritage and because of my body type. I have been called anorexic and bulimic because I am naturally on the smaller side, and I've seen this happen to a lot of other girls too. A lot of people say, oh, she's so thin, so she must be anorexic. So when a girl is thin, she's made out to have an eating disorder and mental issues, and when she's bigger, she's that fat chick. But this is not just a problem for girls. One of my best male friends is a heavyset person, and his friends used to call him fatty or in other derogatory names about his size, and these were his friends who said this. And he always laughed along because he didn't want to make a big deal out of it, but he told me in private that it greatly affects his self-esteem and makes him really self-conscious. And I remember he wore a baggy sweatshirt every day for a year in middle school because he was so self-conscious about his size. Even if it is a joke, it has a huge impact. It is great that at our schools, students get punished for bullying and harassing based on religion, ethnicity, creed, and many other things as well, because I think it gives the students the courage to stand up to these comments. However, bullying is still existing every day, especially based on sexual orientation and body type. I believe that this bill will help create the safe and comfortable environment that a school should be by allowing teachers and students alike to better advocate for and protect all students. When students see teachers discipline their peers, it empowers them to stand up and become allies for them as well. This bill provides a plan to ensure that students across Minnesota would feel safe at school and fulfill their potential in the classroom. Thank you for letting me testify today.
Thank you very much for coming and giving the testimony. And I'm not sure I have all of your names there, but please go ahead and just introduce yourself. And
I'm Ian Smith, also going to Apple Valley High School, and I'm a junior, and I'm just here supporting my friend, Carr.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here.
All right. My name is Andy Berlin, and I'm a senior at Purpage Center for the Arts High School. As a senior in high school, I look back and think about all the experiences I've had in school. Unfortunately, the majority of my memories of middle school and early high school are of extreme pain and stress that come with harassment I experienced due to the fact that I am gay. I attended Mound Westonka School District from the time I was in fifth grade until my 10th grade year. Starting in middle school, students around me started to notice that I was different. When I was in sixth grade, students began to tease and bully me, calling me various homophobic slurs. I thought that if I were to ignore it, it would eventually go away. As years went on, it became worse. By the time I was in eighth grade, I was experiencing verbal, physical, and sexual harassment almost every day. I became very depressed and started to skip school at least one day every week. I became afraid to leave my house and cut myself off from the outside world. I was afraid to walk through the halls at school and even use the bathroom due to the harassment and hazing that went on every day. My grades were deeply affected. Instead of focusing on my schoolwork, I had to focus on trying to get through my day, trying to avoid being bullied. I was lucky to have a teacher and a school psychologist who were very supportive. I could go to them when I was having an issue, but I was often afraid and ashamed to report what I had gone through. Unfortunately, not all the staff was proactive in making the school a safe place for all the students. At one point, my mother persuaded me to talk to the assistant principal, and he did very little to help and implied that I had made the choice to be homosexual. Teachers were afraid of speaking out against homophobia, and most of them never did. Many times when someone would make a homophobic or hurtful comment about my sexuality in class, a teacher would ignore it. After my ninth grade year, I transferred schools because I could not take the pain anymore. Since leaving the Westonka School District, I attended Main Street School of Performing Arts my sophomore year, and I now attend Purpage Center for the Arts High School. Since I have left, I have been able to come out of the closet in a safe and accepting environment. Both schools enforce strict rules about harassment that include harassment due to sexual orientation. Since attending a school where I feel safe, I have been able to thrive. My grades have improved, and I am very involved in my school. I am respected by both my classmates and my teachers. I never take a single day for granted because I know that I could still be back in a school where it wasn't safe to be who I am. I feel that it is essential that this bill is passed. There are many students who are still facing the harassment that I went through every day. I'm constantly thinking of the students who have no one to turn to and feel alone because they are being taught that they are less than humans at school. Without the protections of those in authority, GLBT students are vulnerable to unimaginable harassment and violence. To me, this bill is not political but personal. Schools need to be a place where all students can feel safe to be themselves and to learn. It is not possible to get a good education when you're in an environment where it is not safe to be you. I want for all GLBT students to have the opportunity that I have had to go to a school where they are valued and respected like every other student. And I forgot to mention in my testament, too, that by the time I was 13 years old, I was hospitalized due to the trauma that I had gone through at school. And that's just, I don't know, I thought that was something important that I didn't include.
Thank you very much, and please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senators of the Committee, my name is Leah Matz. I'm a junior at Minnesota New Country School and an organizer with GLSEN. When it comes to issues of activism and advocacy, I am not generally one to rely on the actions of others to make change occur. I believe wholeheartedly in the work of grassroots activism and the tremendous effects it truly has on the world around us. As civically engaged citizens, we all hold an ethical responsibility to participate in our communities. But when the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network's 2007 School Climate Survey is reporting that 90% of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students have experienced verbal harassment, physical harassment, and/or physical assault in regard to their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression, a nearly 10% leap since the climate survey published in 2005, it seems that the issue of school safety is slipping farther and farther out of our hands. I speak to you today not only as a Minnesotan, not only as an organizer for social justice, and not only as a member of the LGBT community, but as a student who has endured copious amounts of pain and suffering, who has felt unsafe wandering the halls of her school alone, and who is undoubtedly a part of that statistic. After coming out at St. Peter High School in 2005, quite thankfully into a loving and supportive family, my school quickly transitioned from a place of education and learning into a place of fear. My oppressors resorted to hate speech and physical abuse such as hitting, kicking, and spitting to express their fear and anxiety with the way I live my life. My body was bruised along with my pride. I found myself faking illness so as not to have to attend class and subject myself to an oppressive environment, an action reported to be taken at least once a month by 33 of my LGBT brothers and sisters. 33%, excuse me. My grades rapidly downspiraled out of control, along with my dignity. My emotional health collapsed, along with my spirit. I feel strongly that the assistance of an enumerated policy rather than the generic one in place at the time of my attendance would have significantly softened the blows of my oppressors. I believe that even the knowledge that I was undoubtedly protected under the laws of my district and my state would have certainly given me a greater opportunity to speak up about my experiences far sooner than I did. While I was lucky enough to have supportive parents to turn to and privileged to know of safe administration within my school, there are far too many left without. And when LGBT students are 2 times more likely not to plan on attending post-secondary education than their heterosexual peers, something quite serious needs to be done. Today, I have taken my experiences and turned them into motivation for myself and others to make a difference in their communities. But I am just one story. I am just one piece of the statistic. I do not ask for your pity, as this story is a part of my past. I do not ask you to shy away from religious convictions, though I'm sure this would not be beyond them. But I ask you to think of humanity and justice and liberty, and to realize that my experiences and the experiences of that 90% do not coincide with any of them. When a child misses school because they feel unsafe, they are blatantly denied their right to an education, and a large portion of their future opportunities are taken along with it. When LGBT youth between 13 and 25 consistently maintain the highest suicide rate on record, they are denied their right to life and to liberty and to their pursuit of happiness. But there is a solution. As your GLSEN research handout shows, it is proven that safe schools policies are more effective in providing a safe climate for LGBT students when sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression are explicitly addressed, and provide a safer climate for all students when personal characteristics supposedly covered by broad umbrella policies are enumerated. The statistics show that students and schools in states with generic policies are sharing the same experiences as those with no policy implemented whatsoever. Yet under 20% of students are reporting comprehensive safe schools policies. Nearly 40% are reporting generic ones, and hence nearly half are left with no policy at all. This is an incredibly unfortunate truth, as that small percentage of fortunate students in areas with comprehensive policies are reporting significantly lower levels of victimization, a much lower frequency of homophobic remarks, and a higher rate of staff intervention. As I mentioned earlier, I was a student lucky enough to come out on the other side. Today, with the addition of continuing my secondary education at Minnesota New Country School, I study as a PSEO student at Gustavus Adolphus College and work as a student organizer for the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network and a youth advisory council person for the Trevor Project, a suicide hotline for LGBT youth. With this work, I encounter several of my peers in the state of Minnesota and throughout the country who are facing these oppressions right now. I feel it to be my duty to use my experiences and my resources to assist them in ending their oppressions. You can too. It would be remarkable to see all students loved and supported by every one of their peers. It would be amazing to ensure that all hate speech was eliminated from rhetoric in all schools. But the education of the masses has to happen on its own. What I ask for your consideration is of all schools, of all of your youth, your committee creates policies to affect, and that you are conscientious of what is indisputably happening in schools to students right now. If you take away one student's rights, you take away all students' rights. I pray that as I conclude today, your blood boils and your hair stands on end. I pray that my passion for the safety of Minnesota's youth and the youth of the nation at large runs thick in your veins. I pray that you think of humanity and of justice and of liberty and help us to change these statistics. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It takes a lot of courage to come forth and give testimony, so thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair, if we could call up my remaining testifiers, Farheen Hakim. I think Rosie Leffler-Kemp is not able to be here. Her child has strep throat. Stephanie Hazen and Monica Meyer.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you leave the table, I wanted to tell you that I am so proud to hear your testimony and that I wish my two boys could be here to listen to you and so that they would learn what it takes to do the work for other kids and to really speak up for the things that you believe in. I'm very proud of you, and I thank you for coming to support Senator Dibble and to support those of us who really support this effort.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a brief comment, and I was really struck by great testimony from all of you, by what Kara and Andy had a similar theme and from different points of view about how important it is to have adults that set the tone for what's okay and what's not okay. And, you know, as a parent, I've watched my sixth grader, and it's, you know, we all remember vaguely junior high and high school, but when you watch your child go through this transition to pre-adolescent, it's sort of stunning to me how enormous the power of peer pressure becomes. I mean, just sort of overnight, it just is like this huge blanket encompassing a school. And that's what the climate is. I mean, that exists everywhere. It exists even here at the Capitol among adults. But in adolescence, I think it's particularly strong, you know, that pressure to conform and to fit in. And that's what allows harassment and bullying to occur, in my opinion, is that no one wants to be different, no one wants to speak out, no one wants to challenge somebody because then they won't fit in. And having parents or teachers or authority figures that establish a standard and say that's not okay allows students to do that and allows the adolescents who want to do the right thing to speak out. So I think, I don't know, it just really hit me how strongly that's important because of your testimony. So thank you.
Well, one thing that's really interesting is I, you know, going to kind of two polar opposite types of schools as to where the safety for GLBT students. And what's interesting about, I go to Purpert Center for the Arts Education, which I don't know if you guys know, it's a state high school for the arts. And we have students from all over the state, from all different backgrounds and political beliefs and religious views. And I know for a fact that some of them may not agree with homosexuality, but because it is so bluntly stated that harassment won't be accepted, that it just doesn't happen. And if it does, it's dealt with right away. Whereas, and then I've come from a school where nothing is said, and I think that a lot of times students want to go for who's the most vulnerable, and when it's a group that's not protected by the authority, they're the most vulnerable. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, it's just who's an authority and is protecting who really does make a huge difference.
Mr. Chair, Senators, Mass. what I do ask you to keep in mind is that it's, as you said, it's not an issue of agreeing with homosexuality or agreeing with whatever this person has that it is that they're being hated for. It's an issue of humanity and an issue of treatment of humans. And that regardless of what they're being hated against, it doesn't matter. They are a human.
Thank you again, and thank you, Senator Anderson, for kind of capsulizing some of the points. Next, we'd like to invite Beth Honecker and is it Farheem Akin and Stephanie Hazen. Oh, and Monica Meyer. And if you'd please give your name for the record and then speak, move the microphone fairly close to you so it kind of magnifies the sound. I'm not sure who should go first, but
please. Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Beth Honecker, and I am from ARC Southeastern Minnesota in Rochester. Our agency serves 8 counties in southeastern Minnesota. I am also a sister of a 36-year-old man with developmental disabilities. I am an individual family advocate, and I have been with ARC for over 10 years now. I was asked to speak on behalf of people with disabilities. I am currently working with a ninth grade student in one of our school districts with the diagnosis of autism. And we just got involved with him not too long ago. Between the months of September and November, this student was physically harassed 3 times. All 3 times he was cornered and he was hit or slapped. And as a result, he hit back. And each time that happened, he was actually given a suspension as well. They harass him because he's different, because he doesn't speak the same way. He doesn't dress the same way. He has behavioral outbreaks. The student also carries a cell phone for safety reasons, and within a few days, he had 110 missed calls on his cell phone. Almost everyone had a voicemail that was a very harassing, upsetting voicemail regarding everything from sex to drugs, from the student to be stupid. People were saying because he was stupid that there were people after him and they would get him. The school did very little to help him in response to this. And, in fact, the principal's response to this was have him leave his phone at home or shut his voicemail off. The family ended up having to have his number changed, and he can no longer give his cell phone number out to any of his friends. Because of all of this harassment, students will not partner up with him in class. He has no friends, and he is now sitting alone at the lunch table by himself. I am in support of Senate File 971 because I believe that all schools and all teachers and all administrations need to be trained and educated that harassment and bullying is not okay. All schools need to be held accountable for the training of staff members as well as students on harassment policies. I believe that every student, whether they have a disability or not, deserves a safe place at school. School should not just be a place for education, but it should also be a place for learning, should be a place for friendship, and it should be a place to take away good memories. It should not be a place to be scared of. I am asking you today to support Senate File 971. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hanukkah. Yep. Is it Ms. Hakim?
Yes. Good morning, members of the committee and Mr. Chair. My name is Farheen Hakim. I'm a youth advocate and a community organizer working predominantly with members of the East African immigrant community. I would like to voice my support for this bill because it clearly defines the difference between actual race, perceived race, and national origin. Many people look at me and try to guess my race. According to Hennepin County, I am Asian American. I also have a foster child, and she is also classified as Asian American. But if you look at our photo, people do not necessarily believe we are the same race. People, this is when the discussion of the realm of perceived race comes in. When I was growing up, people had perceived me as being of a different race, whether it was African or Arab. People asked me what country I was from, and people would walk up to me and start speaking a different language, and I wouldn't even know what they were saying. And lots of times I would say, I'm from here. I live 3 miles away. I'm from Chicago. I live in South Minneapolis, and I still get looks of confusion. Now we enter the realm of the discussion of national origin. My foster child and I are both as American as many of you here. But yet we still get questions about our national origin. I'm sure many of you have parents, grandparents, or great-grandparents that have different national origins. Well, my child's biological parents are Asian adoptees, one from Korea, one from the Philippines. While my biological parents, are immigrants as well from India from over 40 years ago. Like most first-generation Americans, I had experienced harassment and bullying as I was growing up, and I had no consequences were given to those students or those staff. There is no reason for that history to be repeated again 20-some years later. And there's no reason for my child and the other youth that I work with to be vulnerable to that bullying and the harassment. This policy will create a tool to prevent the youth that I work with to have to go through this again. This is why I've successfully been able to work with this youth who's been perceived to be the same race as me, who have parents of a different national origin, or may have themselves be of a different national origin. I understand the challenges and the barriers that these youth experience because I had done that, had experienced it as a young person, and there's no reason for it to continue. I believe that every young person has a right to feel safe and be comfortable in their own skin and also feel that they belong. This policy will change schools and will empower all youth. Please consider passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Stephanie?
Yes.
Hazen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Stephanie Hazen. I'm the National Training and Advocacy Manager for Family Equality Council. Our organization, 15 years ago now, Minnesota became a leader in the country with a very strong Human Rights Act. Our organization wanted to see how well school district policies were upholding the Human Rights Act. We examined non-discrimination and harassment policies in school districts in the metro area and also looked at other research that had been done that looked at district policies across the state. What we found is that despite the strong protections in the Human Rights Act, the vast majority of school districts do not prohibit harassment based on the categories enumerated in the Human Rights Act, failing to protect students from many of the categories within that law. Senate File 971 would bring school harassment policies into compliance with the Minnesota Human Rights Act, extending bullying and harassment protections to more students, including all the categories in the Human Rights Act. Including specific categories in policy sends a message to students and staff that even the forms of harassment that are so pervasive as to become almost invisible are prohibited and will be taken as seriously as any other form of harassment. And without specific protections, without enumerating these specific categories, even well-meaning teachers are sometimes reluctant to intervene in certain types of harassment. The specific inclusion of these categories is necessary to give the staff the backing they need to respond to these forms of harassment. Every student, not just some, deserves to learn in a school environment that is free from bullying and harassment. And I strongly urge you to support Senate File 971. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hazen. Ms. Meyer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senators. I'll be very, very brief. I work for Outfront Minnesota. I'm the policy director, and we hear from teachers, students, and a lot of parents from around the state who just feel like they don't have enough tools to protect all students. It's really simple. If there's a policy that prohibits discrimination, bullying, and harassment, that includes sexual orientation specifically and gender identity, physical characteristics, and disability, all the rest of the people that are on the list for the Human Rights Act, including physical characteristics. They feel like that gives them a tool to be able to really to really be able to address the violence and the harassment that's happening in our schools. And so we're not asking for anything different or new. We're just asking that the policy be made more clear, just to enhance the current policy, to give our educators, principals, school boards, you name it, to give them the power and the tools to be able to show that the anti-bullying efforts are not subjective, that it's actually just something that we're, it's, you know, it's a bar that we're setting high, because of course we want all students to be treated fairly. We want all students to be able to learn in an environment that's conducive for them to be the brightest and the best. And so thank you so much. We're available for questions, and thanks again.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Any questions? If not, we'll move on. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we go back to, I think it's Ms. Hazen. Did you have a number of school districts? Did you have a, were you the one that was telling us how many school districts do not have these policies?
Yes. What we found when we looked at Hennepin County and Ramsey County school districts, we found that nearly 70% of those districts did not include sexual orientation or disability in their harassment policy. When we look at statewide, there was another survey that was done by a UMD student in 2005. She found that 93% of districts across the state do not prohibit harassment based on sexual orientation or gender identity.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Hazen, what did they prevent bullying in? Was it a universal statement that they prevented bullying of any student, or was it, did they name some categories and excluded others?
Thank you, Senator.
Ms. Hazen.
The school districts mostly complied with the narrow definition of statute 121A.03. So they enumerated race, sex, and religion, and left out the other categories in the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman and Ms. Hazen. I guess I wanted to get clarification on that, too. The portion of the law that this bill is repealing says that each board shall adopt a written policy prohibiting intimidation bullying of any student, and it shall address bullying and intimidation in all forms. So the school districts that you mentioned did not have a policy that had a statement similar to that in their policy?
We did not look. In harassment policies specifically, the harassment policies only protect students based on race, sex, and religion. They fail to protect students from disability harassment, harassment based on sexual orientation, gender identity, national origin. They may have had a blanket bullying policy that does not enumerate anything, but research shows that schools that have a comprehensive policy that enumerates enumerates categories actually have lower rates of harassment. Students feel that teachers intervene more effectively. So enumeration is essential for policies to be effective.
Well, and Mr. Chairman.
I think we'll also have an opportunity to hear from a number of the other organizations as well. So any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I'd like to ask Mr. Aronson and then is Mr. Pritchard here? Okay, be next. So,
good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Give me just a moment. We'll make sure we don't buzz through the system here. Thank you.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Roger Aronson. I'm counsel for the Elementary School Principals Association and the Secondary School Principals Association, and we're here to raise some concerns about 971 and 1076 as well, which is the tag-along bill to this, and a couple of comments that I want to make at the outset. And First and foremost, and we value all of the comments that have been made here so far about behaviors in schools and children's experiences and adults' experiences as well. I think in the context of what we do in Minnesota schools, and let me say I have 1,700 school principals and assistant principals that are elementary, middle, and senior high school students. We have an excess of 800,000 students in Minnesota public schools, and they rotate. I mean, we graduate 80,000 a year, and we bring in 80,000 new ones on the front end. And the startling fact of this is that we have 80,000 ninth graders every year. And if you track our student discipline numbers, they start in seventh grade, they move up to eighth, they move to ninth, they peak in 10th, they come down in 11th, and by the time the kids are 12th graders, the disciplinary problems go away. One of the statistical pieces that is pretty well set in Minnesota, we have various levels of discipline, and it's important to keep that in mind because at its core we're talking here about discipline and behavior and how we're dealing with kids, and it's painful for us, you know, when you hear from the table some of the failures that occur where kids are hurt or not protected, and those are painful for everybody that's in the system. They're painful for school principals, for teachers, obviously for the kids that are involved, their parents, and I assume for you as well. But annually, as matters move up the disciplinary scale to suspension, in Minnesota schools, we have about 65,000 suspensions a year. State law requires that we report those to the department. We break them down in categories, and the last year for suspension and expulsion data that the department has is 07-08. We think that system works pretty well in terms of reporting those suspensions, and part of the bill says, let's acquire more data. We don't want to do that. And we don't want to do that just because of the resource pieces, because of the time. But the significant disciplinary data, we currently assemble all that. We break it down, whether it's bullying, fighting, harassment in the various categories. And we think that system works pretty well. And so we'd ask you not to do that. One of the core things I want to convey to the committee on behalf of the school principals here today is, frankly, from some of the questions, I think you find out that we have a pretty comprehensive policy. The bullying policy is a relatively new statute. We have about 10 mandatory policies in Minnesota law. We have to have a locker policy. We have to have the sexual harassment, religious, and racial violence policy. We have to have the bullying policy. We have to have an attendance policy. We have to have a garden variety disciplinary policy. These are all separate requirements. One of the reasons that the sexual harassment, racial harassment, and religious harassment is separate from the garden variety bullying policy is because of the interplay with Chapter 363. Sexual harassment is, as a matter of federal law and state law, a form of discrimination that gives rise to a claim for damages. You can actually sue somebody for that. Good old garden variety bullying, where someone is harassing another student, is inappropriate behavior in a school and is certainly subject to discipline, but it may very well not be a violation of 363A, and certainly it wouldn't give rise to a claim for damages. And that's why these two areas have been handled separately. The bill merges that, and it's up to you with what you want to do with it, but the list of categories that are in there is actually quite a bit broader than what's in 363A. And I'm not sure, I don't think that you pick up anything. There's nothing out there now that is authorized that you prohibit or that this bill prohibits. A couple of other things that we want you to be aware of in the global piece of things. You want to talk about tools, and no one knows this better than this committee. But the tools that we need, we're 49th in school counselors. When you hear the testimony from the students here, they talk about talking to their school psychologist. We need psychologists. We need counselors. We need assistant principals. And what we're doing right now, I was in a meeting in Anoka yesterday. Anoka's laying off 5 assistant principals. St. Paul's laying off 10 principals. Minneapolis is laying off 8. And this is happening throughout the state. That's, you know, and you all know this. We're telling you that. But in terms of working with kids, where this matters, at the contact point of teaching moments and learning moments. And this is what the school principals would tell you. This is a kid to kid and kid to adult matter. That's where it happens. It's not the policy. I want to tell you that on Monday I sent an email out, and that's one of the new lobbying models these days, out to the school principals. As you all do with your constituencies, we send a weekly little note out to the school principals. And I said, this bullying bill is going to be up on Monday. If anyone has some input on that, why don't you send me an email back? I'm not sure if I'll use that model again, but I received in excess of 300 responses from school principals throughout Minnesota. And I read through them. I printed some of them. I think that everyone that testified this morning here, and I think you as well, would be pleased reading those to see that, indeed, this is a big deal in schools. And people are working on this every day, and that there are several forms of training out there. And they identified programs that I hadn't heard of before, but something called OLWUS, if that's close to the correct pronunciation, showed up in several of these. But principals know this is an issue. They're working on it. Continuously, what we need is resources, Mr. Chairman, to continue with this. Just a couple other pieces about this. With regard to the mandatory training, we'd ask that you not do that. We make some decisions about training. If you want to give us some extra resources for the training, fine, but we do include this in our training now, and we don't want to get nipped on the back with someone in the back with someone saying, well, we don't think you've complied with the statute for purposes of doing this mandatory training. Finally, and this is in the companion bill, but it's pretty much the same, the companion bill says that each time a bullying incident occurs that we'd have to contact the parent. And I specifically asked school principals that question. What they said is, by and large, generally, we do that now. But don't mandate it for us to do it in every single circumstance. Sometimes it's a resource matter. Sometimes we actually have it done. If it's serious enough that it rises to the level of suspension, state law requires not only that we call the parent, but that we put it in writing and give them a notice of it in the suspension notice. And we think that piece of this works pretty well. So, Mr. Chairman, in the end, I mean, there's some discussion about, is the bill confusing, or is the current law confusing, or is it in need of clarification? It hasn't been confusing to us. What we perceived the direction was that we were to have policies that prohibited bullying in any form. That's the directive that we took. We aspire to implement that every day. Do we have to work on it every day? Yes. Do we have some successes and some failures? Yes. But to the extent that we need to improve the circumstances in our schools for our kids, we need counselors, we need assistant principals, we need resources for training, et cetera, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Any questions? Members, have Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Aronson, so it sounds like you're doing most of this, and really the only thing when I heard in your testimony is you had a little problem because you're doing most of this is the data collection. But can you tell me, is every school indeed doing every bit of what this bill wants to accomplish?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl.
Aronson.
One of the things I think the committee should know is the department and the school board association and the principals associations, we do the model policy piece pretty well. That's a good a job responsibility for us. And there was some discussion of with Mr. Deans, who's counsel for the school board association, that if this doesn't end up in a bill somewhere, we're going to look at modifying the model policy to add some of the categories that are listed in here. I don't think that we'd add the economic status for some peculiar reasons, but that we would add certainly the sexual orientation and the other pieces into the model policy to make sure that they're there for everybody. My experience is that, by and large, school districts tend to adopt the model policy, in particular the smaller schools. Some of the larger schools do some of their own internal tweaking, and I think I was visiting with Mary Gilbert from St. Paul. Actually, their policy has more of what's in Senator Dibble's bill than what the policy has. So I think the answer is yes, that we work very hard at this in almost all school districts. Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Schreiderman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we have being passed out to you the two model policies which are being merged within this one bill. And to be very honest with you, we understand the value and importance in providing training and providing bully-free environments in school districts. In fact, our model policy is probably one of the most aggressive policies in the nation in terms of requiring disclosure of information, discipline to the employees for not sharing information. And so the model policy is a requirement that all school districts must adopt. And as Mr. Aronson pointed out, school districts will adopt that as long as it's within the legal parameters of the statute. So it's very important that you understand, we understand the value of this. And I just want to point out to you that I think part of, you know, we've heard a lot of discussion about defining what characteristics or what specific regions. And I think the model policy, local school districts can presently do that, and that discussion can happen at the local level. I think we shied away from that in the development of the model policy for the simple reason that we were afraid that we were going to leave one of those groups out. And as you know, once you start going down the list of individuals, there's that possibility that one may be left out. So we have left it very broad and general for districts to tweak that to meet their local community needs and based on their student population. And I think also within that policy, I think it's important for you to know that within that policy, it does require, and remember, and I'll be very honest with you, a model policy doesn't mean to be drafted exactly like or accepted by the school district exactly as it is in our piece. But we suggest that parents or require parents to contact those individuals who are committing the act of bullying. We also talk about annually notifying the community. We also talk about annual training for our staff within that policy. So the policy is very comprehensive, and as I said, goes to the point of disciplining employees for not sharing information when they see bullying acts occur. I think Mr. Aronson alluded to this a little bit, but I think the Human Rights Act provision provides a better avenue for which to fix this piece. Within the human rights, it talks about issues of employment, housing and real property, public accommodations, public services, and education. And within this piece, within this bill, it's very specific to education. And we think that a broader fix would encompass that within the Human Rights Act of 363A02 and those components that are included within 363A02, which we believe the present bill goes beyond that status. We don't have a uniform system of public schools as much as we try to do that. And we understand the importance of providing safe, violence-free environments in schools, and I know school boards do the best they possibly can to encourage that. Part of a school board's responsibility is to develop that policy and provide the guidance to their principals to enforce those pieces. And so it's very important for us to ensure that that happens. But I think the piece that we're concerned about is the broadness of the language within here and try to incorporate that within the Human Rights Act and some of the data practice issues that may arise with some of the sharing of information on the bullying acts. So, Mr. Chair, I will leave it there and be open for any questions.
Okay, a couple questions that I have. How can you just give a little explanation of how you think this goes beyond the policy that the model policy that you've handed out?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what we're talking about is within the human in our model policy, I think we leave it very general. I don't think we list those pieces as it's listed in the current law. When they passed the bullying law, they left it open, allowed us to draft that, and then allow the districts to modify to meet their needs. The point I'm making under 363A02 in the Human Rights Act, it talks about doesn't talk about the socioeconomic status. Instead, it talks about with the status with regard to public assistance. And so I think there's a distinguishing piece there that needs to be fixed. And then also the piece on the physical characteristics or the perceived difference in physical characteristics that is also not within the Human Rights Act. And so we're just suggesting that we perhaps align those if we're going to itemize these within our policy, then perhaps what we do is take that language from the Human Rights Act and then incorporate that into the policy.
But it seems like, just looking at your policy, the policy is broad enough where it picks up, and it's hard to, you know, go through all of your policy, but it
right.
seems like you're picking up everything that would be mentioned here in terms of your model policy. And then the second question is does every school has to have a policy? And now, obviously, how they implement that policy and how much time they spend on it and what that means in terms of, you know, the teachers or the administration, that's another thing. But every school district has a policy.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. And not everybody is a part of MSBA's policy services. Some of the larger districts have taken on that responsibility themselves. But on a mandated policy, we provide the model draft language for all of our 338 public school districts and anybody else who wants to be to receive those model policies.
And then one of the testifiers before mentioned that there were quite a number of districts that did not have a policy relating to certain things. And I'm trying to remember the exact issues. Senator Rummel, you asked the question. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I think the issue is that most of them had adopted the general policies, the broader based piece, and I think that what they were talking about is the distinguishing factors that they're listing within the bill here. So I think that was the difference that the testifier may have been talking about.
All right, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Schneider. I'm trying to get the testimony that we've heard says that some districts don't have policies that comply with 121A.0695. Are there school districts that do not have policies that prohibit bullying and intimidation of any student and bullying and intimidation in all forms? Are there any districts that do not have a policy that does that, even if they don't list individual things? But are there any districts that don't have a policy that complies with this law?
Mr. Schweidewin?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hand, to my knowledge, they all have adopted this policy. This is a mandatory policy, and Mr. Aronson shared with you the lists that are mandated for school districts and therefore make it a piece, and therefore, as you know, as a school board member, policy drives your decisions, and that's the important part to consider.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about hearing testimony that says that school districts don't have these policies, and I don't think there's a conflict here where we've got people saying that they do and other testifiers saying that they don't, and I think that to me is an important distinction. If they don't have the policies, then that's a serious issue to me. If they do, then I'm not sure if I understand the purpose of the bill.
I'm not sure. Senator Hand, I think the important issue is that every school district can have a policy, but in reality, there's intimidation and bullying and activity that none of us would condone or deem acceptable going on. And I think, Mr. Aronson, you mentioned resources, which is, we all know, a problem. So I guess the question is how do we approach the elimination of those kinds of activities?
Prevent it.
Prevent those kinds of activities, given we got policies and it's still going on. I mean, it's okay. Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your comment, because that was precisely what I was going to say. Yeah, schools may have a paper in their file that teachers don't know about, have not been trained about, and we don't have counselors that deal with it. And that's policies in place, and this paper looks very good. From my perspective, you know, I also, Senator Anderson, I have a 14-year-old, and I have worked very hard to make sure that my own boy really understands these issues. And I think that he's being exposed to a lot of things. But what I hear from him and from his classmates sometimes just scares me, how they treat children, how they treat their classmates who have different sexual orientation, children who are heavy. It just makes me cry. And I work with him every day.
That's true.
These policies need to be strengthened. And, Senator Dibble, I am so happy that you're doing this, because that's exactly what our job is. And I am very thankful to you for coming to say we need resources to do so. And I hope you're not telling us that the solution is just to walk away from it and put a paper in the file and say, voila, it exists. I think Senator Dibble's intent here is to support your effort to have a paper that actually means something. And I hope that we do that in this committee, that we provide the resources so that these policies become meaningful and can be enforced.
Thank you, Senator Esrae. I have we are out of time, and so we're going to have to come back to this tomorrow. I don't know if Mr. Pritchard, if you can do that or not, but we have other people here who would like to testify. So I think we have to adjourn for session, and then we will take this up tomorrow morning again. And I want to thank everybody that has come to testify, and please, members, if you'd put the information and all the literature in your folders, then we'll be back tomorrow. So committee is adjourned.
Shall we still do it on the